You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
What's up, guys and gals? Welcome to the Packers Total Access Postgame Show. My name is Clayton. You can check us out on Packernet.com. You can find me on Twitter at Packers_Access. If you'd like to email the show, you can send a message to PackersTotalAccess@gmail.com. And just want to say that tonight's show is brought to you by Fertile Ground Ranch Discipleship Ministry. It was birthed out of the burden to help those in our community and congregations who've come out of a difficult past or an addictive lifestyle. And we are giving away a autographed Paul Hornung jersey, courtesy of Fertile Ground Ranch Discipleship Ministry. And all you got to do to enter yourself into that contest to win the autographed home green Beckett style jersey from pristineauction.com. Like I said, Paul Hornung, number 5. Just go to my Twitter account at Packers_Access. You'll see a tweet that's pinned at the top of the page. Make sure you retweet that tweet and also follow the account. That'll get you entered into the contest one time. And if you'd like to enter yourself in multiple times, you'll also see attached to that tweet a link where you can donate to Fertile Ground Ranch Discipleship Ministry. And for every $5 you donate, you're entered into the contest one additional time, and there's no limit on how many times you can enter into that contest. We just gave away a Quay Walker jersey to a gentleman up in Minnesota. We had a Packer fan behind enemy lines, Jake, so that's always nice, right? But really excited about the Paul Hornung giveaway. But with that being said, man, we've got a special guest on tonight. And guys, there may be others drop in. We don't know. It was a pretty rowdy Sunday night. I know the chat was lit up, and it was a lot of fun watching the Packers and the Eagles lock horns here on Sunday night. But Jake is the host of It's Always Draft Season podcast here on the Packernet Podcast Network. And do you got anything else that you do on the side, Jake, that you'd like to tell the folks about?
Yeah, just a bit real quick. Obviously, being part of the draft, you know, that comes with a lot of breakdown film and stuff with prospects. So I do that a lot on the YouTube channel. It's actually linked with the stream tonight, but it is, if you go to my Twitter at Jake NFL Draft, you can find the link there.
So awesome. Good stuff
there as well.
Good stuff, man. Well, like I said, appreciate your time hopping on, and you hop off anytime you need to. We're planning on going about an hour. This is, like I said, live on YouTube and Twitter. Appreciate everybody joining us there. And then also this will be on podcast form immediately as we wrap up. That way everybody's got it for the Monday work day. So what's your initial thoughts on the game tonight, Jake? What's the first thing that comes to mind when you say, how would you describe this game between the Packers and the Eagles? That obviously the Eagles come out on top 40-33.
I think in a word, chaotic, and like in the best way, just watching football that way. Like it had pretty much everything, maybe minus defense is probably the best way to describe it. But I mean, it's hard not to start with obviously the run defense and just, you know, not staying disciplined in rush lanes and letting Hurts kind of find those escape routes, not tackling when they have the opportunities, you know, to limit Miles Sanders. Like there was just so much to unpack there with the front seven. And I think, you know, we're probably gonna be talking about the front seven a lot in the next 5 months, I imagine. So, but I mean, how can you not talk about love to Watson for that touchdown?
Oh man, I'm telling you. Twitter blew up.
Oh man, you just knew. And I wanted to save this because I knew that the show was going to be tonight. I was like, once Epps and Blankenship were both on the screen, it was over. It was over because the angles were poor. You weren't catching him. That was it. It was it. Watson was gone at that point. And oh man, that could be a sign of what's to come. We'll see. But that was that's gonna stay in the mind for the next who knows how long. So
absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And you know, it's funny because there's no shortage of opinions when it comes to Rodgers or Jordan Love, especially on Twitter. I'm sure you've seen it. And everybody kind of gets grouped into two camps. And Ryan and I have joked about this. And Ryan and I disagree for the most part on what should be done, I believe. I don't think we disagree on what the issues are. But it's funny because when you go on to Twitter, it's like you can't be in the camp of both, right? It's you're either a Rodgers lover or a Rodgers hater, and there's nothing in between. And I can't help but prod the trolls on Twitter. I like to put little tweets out there to get them to come flooding in just to point out why they're wrong. But when you see Jordan Love, the thing that comes to mind for me is we've got a unique opportunity. If the coaching staff does indeed think he's the next quarterback to step in for the Packers after Rodgers leaves, forget the fifth-year option, and let's lock him up to a long-term deal. Because the way the contracts will lay, if indeed Aaron does come back for a final year next year, then obviously you'll be able to restructure the contract in a sense to where the majority of the cap hit will hit the following year after Rodgers leaves, although there will be some layover of Rodgers' salary cap hit. But it almost – the timeline almost matches up perfect, right? So with that being said – the question is, how long does Rodgers want to play? He may retire after this year. He may come back next year. But as far as Jordan Love and what you've seen of him so far, and we're gonna recap the game, guys, I promise. But since this is fresh on the brain here, I want to go ahead and hit on it. With what you've seen of Love, do you think he can be a quality starting quarterback or better?
Yeah, I mean, I think he can. And I don't think it's popular to say that anymore, truthfully. Right. I think, you know, after when that happened in the 2020 NFL draft, I remember being live and just thinking to myself, oh my gosh, this actually just happened. And I really thought, you know, in the draft, and I'll smack dab take this L right now live on stream. I've taken it before. I had Love ranked out of Herbert. Was that wrong? Absolutely it was. But I still think Love is still in that, was in that like area where like, yeah, he has – generates velocity, you know, the touch throws are there, all the arm talent, off script, does all of these things well. It's just like when he's in structure, you know, does the accuracy and decision making over the middle of the field, which is struggled with a lot of QBs, you know, even Jalen Hurts, you know, Russell Wilson, all these guys who don't like throwing over the middle. It's like, can he get better at that? And that was, can the footwork be better? Like all these things that you can kind of just coach him up to be. And maybe this last, like, you know, what is it, 6 weeks of the season now, 5 weeks for the Packers, it's like, can he play all those 5 weeks and kind of you build something for him to where like this is year what three now for him. And he's just, everything looked crisp tonight though, didn't it? Like yeah, it felt it crisp and it looked like, okay, behind the scenes, even though he's not been playing very much, like things look better than the guy who threw, I think, 17 picks his final year at Utah State.
Yeah.
So I think the potential's there, but you're just definitely in like this weird, awkward situation right now where you're like, I mean, thumb or not, Rodgers played okay tonight. I mean, the two picks weren't great, but like wasn't bad for a guy who really has like what a bone break joint issue and an avulsion in his thumb. Like he can still play at a high level. So you're kind of, yeah, in that stuck kind of place, which is where we thought they'd potentially be. Right. And so it's hard. I do think Rodgers does come back. I think he does have unfinished business if they shut him down, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. I think they got to find a way to not pick up the fifth year and maybe look to extend. I know it can be just that could be straight up reaction from what we saw in very limited game action tonight, but
right,
there's definitely something there with Love, and that's why he was a first round pick in the first place.
Absolutely. So. And again, this goes back to and we're going to get to the comments here in the chat in just a second. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about with Twitter. You know, it's either he hasn't shown anything, or, you know, the big talk has been, you know, the coaching staff knows what they have, and that's why they're forcing Aaron to play with the injury. That's why they're allowing Aaron to kind of flex on him, all those things. I think everything on Twitter is an overreaction, and myself included. You know, I mean, it's something that it's so easy to fall into, especially with this little thing right here called a smartphone. I mean, you can basically let the world know how you feel in an instant, right? But back to Jordan Love. I mean, yeah, he's shown how much he's improved. And my argument, Jake, has always been when people would bash him through the preseason and everything, it's like he's playing with third and fourth stringers. Like you can't and they'll go, well, he's going against third and fourth string. Offense is totally different than defense. Defense is simply reactionary. Offense is all these guys have to be on the same page. And I think after tonight, what you've seen was he's definitely got the arm strength. He can spin it. He showed accuracy at times. The one behind Lazard, I'll have to go back and watch the tape, but I kind of feel like it was intentional, almost like he was trying not to lead him into coverage. Could have been, but again, we'll have to go back and look and see what the bracket was there over the top. But, yeah, so we got Mr. Green in the house, and he says Jordan Love is 100% the real deal. I mean, he sure showed some flash tonight, and I think they ran 10 plays and only ran the ball once while he was in there. So 9 passes, I believe, if I understood correctly. We'll look at the stats in a second. Lee says, is 12 okay with QB2? I don't think 12's okay with QB2, and I don't think that's in the plans either, to be honest with you, Lee.
Yeah, I don't know about it being okay with it. Yeah, Lee, big-time follower of all the channels. So
awesome.
Great to see him there. Great to see him there. But, yeah,
absolutely. We appreciate you guys tagging along for sure.
Absolutely.
So we're going to kind of keep an eye on the pressers. If it makes sense, we'll go to them. But let's kind of go to the stats here and walk through the game a little bit. As they come up, we'll cover stats. You know, I kind of charted everything all night, Jake, and a couple things that flashed to me, man. Quay Walker, am I being too critical of Quay Walker? Because I was as big a Quay Walker fan as any, especially coming out of the preseason, although I didn't have him very high on my draft board. I'm eager to hear, how high did you have Quay Walker on your draft board? Do you remember?
Roughly. Okay. So I'm going to roll back the clock, but I think he was linebacker 5 for me in the class.
I'm pretty sure he was 5 or 6 for me.
Ooh, I've got it. Yes. Fifth for me. So,
what's been your take on him, man? Cause I feel like, you know, I'm looking at it week in and week out, and I'm going, man, maybe we should do some kind of rotation and allow Barnes to get on the field a little bit more if indeed we're in the hunt. And I know you don't want to stunt his growth, but, man, am I wrong? Is he just kind of looked lost out there?
Yeah, this was always the question, right? And when you draft a player like this, there's the linebacker position is one of the hardest, I think, to evaluate because there's so many keys. You know, what's your gap fit in the run game? There's so much that you have to evaluate and know defense as a whole, especially what the front 7 is doing to evaluate these guys. Like anybody can go, oh, this guy can run a chase and catch people. That's really awesome. Like he can do that. Everybody can see that. Right. So when it came to Walker, it was like, yeah, this dude can, when he's asked to fill and like, you know, he's powerful and he's fast. Right. And that's two things you can't teach a lot of guys to do. Right. But
yeah.
There's so much growth in the mental game with him. And that's kind of why that Georgia really had Dean out there for the most part. And then Tyndall and Walker were rotating in. It's because they knew that Dean was really the scalpel, the tactician out there that kind of knew where he needed to be, knew where everyone else needed to be. And Walker is the player who's just, he's such a great athlete, and he just kind of loves to out athlete people and out strength people. And that worked on a Georgia defense that has stud after stud after stud on the front 7.
Yeah.
The NFL is going to be a little bit of a different test. There's no doubt about it. Like these guys are all legit too. They were all doing the same thing in college. So I thought the Tennessee game was really good from him.
Yeah.
But this week, it felt like, oh, he's where he needs to be, tackle. And it just didn't happen. The execution wasn't there, but like I expected these kind of growing pains with like this high projection upside prospect with Walker, and it's kind of the same thing I thought of with Watson as well, is it might take time now for Watson. It's clearly taking less time apparently, but I do think the linebacker room feels good in the fact that like you're even suggesting, oh, we could get Walker off the field a little bit more because Barnes and McDuffie have actually played pretty decent with Campbell out, but it's always a little bit of a project. He was no like Chad Muma who's you know, I thought was really, really fundamentally sound, you know, coming downhill. Like he was just going to be the upside play, and it's going to take him some time.
Gotcha. Yeah. And it's funny because when he does make the tackle, man, what a violent tackler he is. I mean, he brings the thump, but like when you've seen, you know, his specific assignment there early in the first quarter was to spy Jalen, and he just gets juked out of it. It's like, you're supposed to be that guy that can run him down. Right. And it's easier said than done. And obviously he slipped as well. But We've got Raymond here in the chat. Raymond says, Rodgers' last game as a Packer, question mark. For me personally, I think it's going to come down to surgery, Jake. I think to answer that question, it's going to come down to the evaluation. They'll probably shut him down now, I would imagine. Throw him on IR, have the surgery. And if the surgery goes great, I could see 12 coming back next year. You probably don't want to go out that way. But if the surgery, for whatever reason, he can't get, you know, the feeling back the way he wants it. And like you said, it was an avulsion fracture where they said that basically the tendon pulls part of the bone loose as well. I mean, that sounds, I wouldn't be able to make a sandwich with that injury. And we're out here going, I can't believe it took him out of the game. But what do you think? Has he played his last game?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it? I don't think so. I really don't. I think he, as much as you know, as serious as the injury is, and as serious as it sounds, and you know, as difficult as it will be, especially on the throwing thumb. If this was his left thumb, I think people would be a lot less concerned. But like, as tough as he is, and he doesn't get a lot of credit for being tough for some reason, I don't know why. And as determined as he is, I agree. I don't think he's going out that way. Yeah. At least not in green and gold. Like, I just feel like he'll be back at least next year. Would they trade him in the offseason? I have no idea. I don't know. They didn't trade him last offseason when I felt like was probably the time to do it with Adams leaving. So I can't imagine they're going to now kind of backtrack on what they've done, you know, in the past several months, you know, and in the offseason to ship him out. So I don't think so.
Yeah. And the way the contract is structured too, it would kind of be this Sinai pill. I mean, it really would for the organization. It's structured in a way that if he decides to walk away within the next 3 years, the Packers aren't going to be completely, you know, hemmed up with the salary cap. However, if they try to trade him, they're going to absorb a huge cap hit to the point where they may not even be able to fill the roster they have, as silly as that sounds. So it's obvious that this was a 3-year agreement where Rodgers said, I don't plan on playing beyond 3 years. This might be my last year. Let's just take it year by year. You know, he was famous for saying it's a 1 plus a 2 with the option of a 3. And then, of course, you know, the only person that really knows is David Dunn, his agent. And, you know, I actually heard a really cool interview between Andrew Brandt, who used to be an executive for the Green Bay Packers, and then also I think his name is Charles Rogers, which is the super agent, the baseball agent that negotiated Russell Wilson's contract. And they both agreed on the podcast. Nobody knows the details of the contract as far as retirement goes, other than Aaron Rodgers and his agent and, of course, the organization. So I think it's structured in a way where this was a mutual agreement. And I think that the Packers will fulfill that mutual agreement of 3 years if Rodgers wants to stay 3 years. And I don't think he will, though. I think he either retires this year or he comes back next year. If I had to bet the farm, I would say he's coming back next year. But Lee in the chat here says, how about Ford and Nixon? Two bright spots. Barry's probably scheming how to tame and nerf those two. LOL. I'll tell you this, man. I've defended Barry because I've seen on the tape from time and time again, and Coach Hahn and I broke it down, and I've seen other people break it down, and it seems like more times than not, I see players making mistakes and not the scheme being the mistake. However, man, when you see what Jalen, you know, what Hurts did tonight and how there was no adjustment until late in the second half, it was mind boggling. We kept coming with the wide nine and rushing right upfield. It was obvious nobody was telling him, hey, look, keep him in the pocket. But then on top of that, when you're bringing that 4-man rush and they run that quarterback draw, I mean, essentially what you saw tonight, that quarterback draw was just as effective as the halfback draw against Dallas. And we've seen them do it time and time again. It was like there was no adjustment. But back to the question here and what Lee asked, how about Ford and Nixon? Anybody who listens to my podcast knows I'm all about extending Ford. I think Ford is a quality safety. We've only got one on the roster next year, to the best of my knowledge, that's actually seen playing time, and that is, unfortunately, Darnell Savage. So I would like to see Ford signed to a 2 or 3 year deal similar to Rasul Douglas, to where it's very affordable and you can get out if indeed it was just a flash year. And then when it comes to Nixon, I mean, you've got a quality kick and punt returner, you know, and that's one thing that we need. Go ahead and button that up. And then you've seen him come in on defense after Savage left. And I believe when Jair went out for a play, but Nixon's just one of those guys that's a football player. But how do you feel about those two?
Yeah. Man, I don't want to be, I don't want to bring more indictment on the coaching staff, but like, it took this long to figure out that Keyshawn Nixon is this good returning. How did it take this long
to realize that Amari was that bad? Like,
I just, that one boggles the mind. As much as like, I get like Bisaccia has been like lauded as the special teams guy. They've been pretty average most of his special teams units, but even to not eat, like think of the idea of bringing in like Nixon to return at all in October was apparently not a thing. I don't know why that will boggle the mind for sure for a long time. I'll tell you what, he plays with fire on defense too. He plays with a lot more fire than unfortunately one of my favorite players to ever put green and gold on, Mr. Jair Alexander. But you know, it hurts to say that, but man, him and Ford play like their hair is on fire, like it's their last play. They both of them play like that, and that's awesome to have on this defense because it feels like that's lacking week after week after week. So it's just, yeah. It is. But yeah, I think you made a good point. Like defending Barry, I feel like they've been okay. Like it really has fallen a lot on the offense the first couple months. You know, the defense was playing okay, and there were still though those couple coverage busts here and there and whatnot. But like they were okay. But tonight it felt like we were watching the divisional game against Kaepernick.
Oh,
plus the 2019 NFC title game against the Niners as well. It felt like both of those into one. It was like just stopping both types of rushing attack. They had no answer, and it was rough to watch tonight.
And it was like you get late in the fourth, and you're like, you absolutely know that Philly is looking at this. It's what Sirianni does so good. They know their opponent is now the clock. Sell out to the run. If they beat you over the top with the pass, so be it. But you cannot let them continue to just run the ball right down your throat, man. And Lee, you asked, what's the pod? Part of the PackerNet podcast network. My podcast is called Packers Total Access. And obviously, Jake's got the It's Always Draft Season podcast on that network as well. So feel free to check it out, man, but no pressure. Yeah. Like I said, just appreciate you hanging out in here with us tonight. So, yeah, when it comes to those two, I think, though, to go back to Lee's question there, I would like to see them lock those two up. I mean, you're getting a 2-for-1 with Nixon, someone who could play dime back for you, maybe a little nickel back in a pinch, but also be your punt and kick returner and also play special teams as gunner at times. And then Rudy Ford, I think I would like to see him at safety. I mean, he's the one who forced that fumble. I came up off the couch, man. He is by far my favorite player this year to watch because I just love those long shot stories. And what better name than Rudy, right? And
especially me being a Notre Dame fan. So. Absolutely.
But A.J. Dillon showed a little bit of life tonight. Let's kind of look at the stats here real quick. First of all, before we move on from quarterback, Aaron was 11 of 16, even with the broken thumb and then obviously some kind of cartilage issue, it sounds like, in the rib or the torso area. But 11 to 16, 140 yards, 2 touchdowns, but had the 2 interceptions. Of course, I felt like the 2 interceptions, Jake, were mental mistakes too, man. I really didn't feel like – well, maybe the one there over the middle was kind of behind Lazard. That definitely came out as a wobbler. That might have been the thumb. But that second one, he just really got baited into that coverage.
They did. They did the same thing. They were looking for that same play again that they ran, what, like three plays earlier on that drive? But, yeah, that was –
yeah, went back to the well just once too often, right? But Jordan Love was 6-for-9 for 113 yards, 12.6 yards average, 1 touchdown, no picks, obviously, quarterback rating of 146.8. And again, you know, like I tried to point out in the chat, you know, it was obviously 2-minute drill time. And what do you do when you're the team that's winning there, Jake? You kind of play this kind of prevent defense and you weren't taking what they were giving him. But like you said, man, as soon as Christian Watson caught that crosser, it was like, oh Lord, there is nobody catching that.
Oh
guy.
Man.
So it's exciting.
Oh man.
So let's do that. Let's, again, I went back to AJ Dillon. That's what I was trying to get at. I'm like a squirrel over here, man. I'm all over the place. AJ Dillon, 8 carries, 64 yards. Looked like the old AJ Dillon. That was good to see, although it looked like he got banged up there at the end and left. 8 carries, 64 yards, averaged 8 yards a pop, 1 touchdown. His long run was 20. Aaron Jones, 12 carries for 43 yards, only 3.6 a pop, his long being 10. So, you know, as a team, 21 carries, 106 yards, you average 5 yards a carry. There was one series there It was a little bit later in the game, and I got it was actually right before halftime, that our last possession before halftime, Jake. And anybody who listens to my pod knows that I'm big on the middle eight and turnover differential. I feel like that's typically what decides the game. And what I mean by middle eight, for those of you listening, the last 4 minutes of the first half and the first 4 minutes of the second half really controls the outcome of the game as far as momentum. And here we had a chance to kind of drain the clock and go down the field. The running game was working. And what did we do? We came out and we ran a play action pass. I think we took a sack on that play, then threw two straight incompletions, punted. And then on top of that, we get a big second down sack. And LaFleur calls a timeout. And I was just like, oh, my God. Again, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Jake, I'd be going, yeah, man, let's be aggressive. Let's try to get the ball back.
Yep.
But having studied the middle eight this last, you know, year and a half, I'm like, my goodness, that was a huge mistake. Because what did they do, Jake? They went right down the field, scored, and they took over the middle eight. They already had the turnover differential. Now your chances of winning goes down to, like, I mean, you know, chances of winning for Philadelphia is in the 90th percentile at that point. But what did you think about the play calling? Because it's funny, I went to Twitter and immediately it's I see, and I don't know if some of them are serious or not, but it was, well, it's obvious LaFleur isn't calling the plays anymore. I'm going, is he faking on the sideline? Is that what he's doing? Is he just walking around with the play chart, like trying to get an Oscar? But anyway,
yeah, he's got a play chart, and just, it's like written in huge letters. It says defer to 12 on there. That's what it is, right? Like that's what it is. That's what Twitter thinks it is.
Right. Exactly. Anyway,
the second touchdown drive where it just, the run game was just chunk play after chunk play after chunk play, and AJ Dillon cashing in that touchdown. My goodness. Did they, it definitely felt like it was, oh, the Eagles really, really miss Jordan Davis. Really miss Jordan Davis. Because, yeah, without him, like, as much as, like, oh, Linval Joseph and Dominican Sue, they're great ads. Like, they kind of try to patch something up that clearly is now a hole in the ship. It came loose again. It came loose again because it felt like the interior three were just having their way up front. Everybody, it looked like zone perfection. There was just so much. It was so crisp on that second drive that I thought, man, they can just, it felt like the Dallas game again for a second. It felt like, all right, well, they can just manhandle them up front. And Dillon doing this, oh man, was he was picking his spots well. And when he picks his spots and he gets some momentum behind him, that is not something you want to tackle when you're the second, third level defender. So when he started picking his spots like that in some runs, and he wasn't just kind of like, oh, I'll find a guy and run him over. You know, he was finding lanes. It was like, oh my goodness, this is something that Green Bay can definitely cook with going forward. And that was a blast. Like, result aside, like, seeing that drive, just Jones, Dillon, big pass play to Jones. Like that was masterful. And that's the LaFleur we've watched now for several seasons, this fourth season now. So that was really cool.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Absolutely. And Lee in the chat says, do you like the 12 offense from the gun? You know, obviously the hand has played a big role in that. And I did a little study a couple of weeks ago because I had a lot of people on Twitter talking about how Aaron Rodgers is not running the LaFleur system and this and that. So I went through and charted the top five offenses as far as points per play that run the Shanahan wide boot scheme, basically wide zone boot scheme. And we were actually under center more than every team other than Miami. And it's like they obviously run the 49ers version, and we tend to lean towards the McVay Rams version. Yeah. But, you know, someone else on Twitter said it's the shotgun runs that are killing us. And on the surface, I wanted to agree. So I went back and ran the stats from that game recently, and we actually averaged almost 7 yards a carry running out of the gun. So I'm like, it's not that. But to answer your question, Lee, do you like the 12 offense from the gun? What I don't like, let me just answer it this way. What I don't like is how most of the year we've run all these tight formations, and you can just see teams loading the box. And it's like they're not being stressed horizontally pre-snap, therefore they're keying in on the run and the RPO. Now, we've gotten away from the RPO aspect, and you can kind of see things opened up a bit more, at least here recently. But what do you think about that as far as the 12 offense from the gun? I like how that's worded there, though.
I haven't done a deep dive on this, but like to me, I really like gun run. Cleveland's done a really good job with it this year, mm-hmm. especially. And that's a team that, again, as well, like that's that kind of that tree where, you know, there, and I don't think a lot of people are afraid of Brissett, but obviously he's a run threat. So that kind of, you know, might keep the defensive line back just a little bit and hesitate because he can run, especially with that end man in the line of scrimmage, right? Who's kind of freed up, but I like it. I think the gun run to me favors Jones because Jones has the burst acceleration for the exit lane, right? I think Dylan is very much favored towards under center run because everything can get blocked a little bit quicker for him. He doesn't have to make the snap decision necessarily. He has right. more time to look what's in front of him. So when Jones is out there, the gun run is totally good with me. But yeah. I think Dylan kind of wants to get that head start and needs to because, again, he's not as, you know, fast in that 5 to 10 yard, you know, area that Jones is. And that's where it can kind of get into trouble. And people are like, oh, I hate the gun run. I just think Dylan likes the under center run better and will thrive with it better. But mm-hmm. I don't think we should get away from it necessarily. I even with Lovin, if he plays the rest of the year, which I expect him to.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's what Lee said here in the chat. I only like the gun with Jones. And, you know, I think completely see that for sure. Yeah. And somebody like AJ Dillon, you know, you want to be able to see the hole, lower your pads and just explode through. Right. So it makes complete yeah. sense. And we know Jonesy he's that scat back, that out of the gun, man, just a quick twitch. He's unbelievable. He's one of my favorite Packers all time. What a stand up yeah, guy. He's just awesome. But yeah. let's talk about, first of all, you know, in the post game show, typically we talk about why did the Packers lose? Listen, it's one quick answer. Run defense. Okay. Yeah. There it is. If that's what you came for, go ahead and turn off the show. Have a good night. Right. But we're going to talk yeah. about a few other things. Yeah. I mean, rather than just harping on the fact that this run defense was so bad, that's really what cost you the game. But Christian Watson, 4 catches, 110 yards, only 6 targets. You're starting to see that number of targets closing in on the amount of receptions now, Jake, which is a really good sign that he's catching the ball better. He's seeing the ball better. Everything's becoming more comfortable. But again, had another touchdown tonight, that 63 yarder. Wow, what a play. And I got Rob Domofsky pulled up here on Twitter, and he tweeted out just a little while ago. He said a couple of notes on Christian Watson's 63 yard touchdown. Per at Next Gen Stats, his top speed of 20.97 miles per hour, 20 mile an hour, got pretty much 21 miles an hour, is the fastest max speed by a Packers ball carrier on a touchdown this season. He's the first Packers rookie with receiving touchdowns in 3 straight games since Billy Houghton in 1952.
Wow.
So anytime a player does something wow. for the first time since the 50s, right, when Elvis wow. Presley was running around shaking those hips, I mean – that might have been right before Elvis, as a matter of fact. But anyway,
yeah, that's wow.
Christian Watson, I got to ask you, because we were right on the same page when it came to Quay Walker in the draft. With Christian Watson, I wish I had my draft sheet pulled up, but I'm going to say I had him 4th or 5th wide receiver as well. It might have been lower than that. I don't want to miss talking. I know I had several people above Christian Watson. I'm more of the Greg Cosell fan, right? Greg Cosell, watch the tape. I could care less about measurables. I want to know what can you do in big-time games, especially in the 4th quarter. What does the tape show, right? How do you play in big-time moments? And obviously with Christian Watson going to a smaller school, you didn't see that. And that's one of the reasons why I had him quite a bit lower. Obviously the Packers had a first-round grade on him. they lucked up and were able to trade up and get him in the second round. But where did you have him graded out as far as round and talent roughly?
Oh, boy. All right.
I don't mean to put you on a spot. We didn't even talk about this stuff
either. All right. Let's see. How can I expose myself just a little bit more tonight? All right. Let's see where I had it here.
I swear that's not the goal. I was
myself. All right. Yes. So wide receiver 10. All right.
Mine might have been closer to that. It may have.
Okay. Second rounder. I think with him, and it's hard, and this is what makes the draft so interesting because, like, for me, I'm more grading as to what I've seen. I want to somehow incorporate the, like, in 1 year, in 3 years type of grade. I think that'd be much more interesting. Because from a pure skill set standpoint, I was like, all right, well, he's – people – because the MVS comps were really real, and I was like, almost there. I was, like, almost there with it because I'm like, yeah, okay, he's 6'4". The measurables are the same. He's fast, and he drops the ball. Okay, fine. You can have that bit, but as smooth as an athlete as he is, that's where it all stopped. It all stopped when he has the ball in his hands. He's again pre-catch as well with how fluid he moves, and you saw that with the kind of what he did on one of the touchdowns against Dallas. I forget which one it was. It's the second one, I think, on the 4th and 7, and just to see how fluid he can change direction, MVS couldn't do that. And so for me, it was always like, okay, can this guy be a true one, like be a true X receiver? And I thought, you know what? Even if he's not, like getting a guy like this instantly changes your offense because everybody has to account for that much speed. And if his hand technique could get better, because you go back and watch the Minnesota catch at the beginning, you can just see how wide he kind of gets before the ball arrives. He needs to be a lot tighter with his hands. Mm-hmm. But like as special as an athlete as he is, like, I get moving up. I get why they needed it. And his speed alone changes things. Like on the touchdown to Cobb, safety went with him. Safety went with Watson. They know how fast he is and they know how he can run. So if you got a guy in the backside of the play who can beat his man one-on-one, boom, we're golden. Because he's going to take so much attention. So I didn't have him super high. I didn't have him first round grade. And that may come back to bite me for sure. Guess what? We're all going to miss, but like it is. Once they drafted him, I was on board and I understood why they did it. And I'm it's hard not to be excited about 6 touchdowns in 3 games. Let's be honest. Like, if he can win more contested balls like he did that first touchdown against Tennessee, oh boy, because that was another one where it was like you saw it at the Senior Bowl a little bit, you saw it on film a little bit, just not winning as much as a catch point at the moment of truth for a 6'4 guy. But like if he can do that more, oh my, just throw the evaluation out the window because it was probably way wrong. Like
And, you know, the catch that he made there that Aaron Rodgers referred to as, you know, getting the big gorilla off his back, the over-the-shoulder catch, the way he positioned his body to defend, to, you know, kind of fend off the DB and then bend back outside. I mean, that was the moment for me where I was like, hold up. Now, that's not just raw, you know, physical ability. That's a little bit of technique there, right? So Good stuff.
The deep threats. If you're a really good deep threat with really great speed who can stack, if you can adjust to the football like that on a consistent basis, oh my.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of deep threats who kind of have to slow down to catch the ball. And there's a lot of that. Like they just love running past people and they're not really great adjusters. They kind of have to slow themselves even more or even stop to catch the ball. If he can just make that subtle adjustment a lot more like he did, like you said, on that touchdown, boy, they're cooking with gas in Green Bay. Oh, boy.
Absolutely. On the defensive side of the ball, you know, obviously the run defense was brutal. You know, I think Rudy Ford is going to come out with a fairly high PFF grade. I felt like Rudy Ford played a really good ball game. Quay Walker, you know, led the team with 11 tackles, but I wouldn't be surprised if he has another low grade, me personally. Amos, I felt like, had a really bad game. He had 9 tackles, you know, on the stat sheet, but it just seemed like so many times he was constantly reaching for ball carriers. And you know, he was getting beat in coverage. He got beat on that touchdown, obviously. Actually, that was Rasul that got beat on the touchdown. But Amos, it just seemed like all night he was chasing plays constantly. Rasul had a rough night, I think. But the one I wanted to ask you about, and he was on my list. I had 5 players I wanted to watch tonight and really key in on because, guys, yeah, the season is pretty much over, right? We may not statistically be eliminated, and we knew it was going to be a tough road to hoe down this stretch. but there's still things that you can find to look for in the game, right? And things to build off of it. And for me, it was Christian Watson at number one, Devontae Wyatt, number two, Kingsley Enagbare, number three, number four, Quay Walker, number five, Rudy Ford. And to me, three of those guys checked the boxes. Obviously, Christian Watson had a great game. Rudy Ford, I feel like, had a solid game. And Kingsley Enagbare was the one I wanted to ask you about. You know, he was my draft crush. I was screaming for him to take him for two rounds before they finally did. And to see him come out and play the run as well as he has been really impressive. Obviously, he stopped the quarterback sneak there firing off the edge. He had a pass deflection, I believe, on the very first defensive snap of the game. But he finished with seven tackles. How do you feel like he's done as far as filling in for Rashawn Gary? And you know, I kind of look at Kingsley as one of those. He's one of those minimum contracts, being a late-round pick. And in 3 years, if we move on from Preston Smith and free up that cap room, then you're going to have him opposite Rashawn Gary. How did you feel about him coming into the draft? And then how do you feel like he's kind of adapted as he stepped in for Rashawn?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the edge class was extremely talented in 2022, and it's going to be again, obviously, in 2023. Not to get ahead of ourselves here, but, like, I had a three on him, so I thought for sure, like you said, for about two rounds, it felt like, all right, who's going to actually, like, pick him finally? Like, it should have been a while ago, and that's why I think everybody's turning to, like, day three is, like, the Packers just – it was a gold mine, and it kind of was. But, yeah, I remember it being so enthralled with just how much of a plan he had rushing the passer, where the how much he could counter when he needed to. Just, again, the many ways you can win as a pass rusher is very impressive. Like, it's nice the guys who have all the traits who can just go, like, all right, we talked about this with Quay Walker. It's like, it's nice the guys who are explosive and strong and who just think they can overwhelm everybody, right? Eventually, at the contact point, there's going to be a point where you get stopped. And if you don't have an answer after that, it's going to be hard to succeed. I feel like Enagbare had more answers to that question than some of the guys I even ranked ahead of him, just from a traits perspective. So I thought for sure, like, okay, like you said, this guy should have been kind of off the board by now, but, like, the pass rush hasn't been perfect. And it's, again, when you're taking a step up, like, even from the SEC, I don't care how good it is down there, which it is, but, like, it's going to take some time. But, like, yeah, I'm with you. I've been pretty impressed overall with Enagbare, especially for a day three pick to come in and get meaningful snaps and filling the shoes of a guy who's really, really taken the step to being an elite player. Like, that is not an easy shoe to fill. And I thought he's done pretty well. And to be as physical as he can be setting an edge and being as physical as he can be at the contact point and not being, to put this, like, too greedy, right? Like, there are some guys who kind of can take themselves out of plays because they feel like they can, you know, oh, I can get around this guy, I know that, and, like, that's good and all. But, like, I feel like he's been even fundamentally sound too. Like, that it's rare to get a fifth round pick who can do some of these things. And I know, like, we harp on the, like, instant impact for a lot of guys, but, like, for him to do it as a day three pick is impressive. But for those of us who maybe had him graded a little bit higher, we're not as surprised. So he's been not a pleasant surprise, because I feel like he had this in him, but, like, especially on a team that's been just struggling outright defensively, especially tonight, like, that, I was impressed.
Yeah. I expected him to play a little rotational role, right? And when he was kind of thrust into the spotlight, the thing that I expected is, okay, he'll be a third down rush specialist, but he's not someone you're going to want to have him playing the run. Lo and behold, when I see him on the run snaps, I'm like, he plays the run great. And, you know, Preston Smith, when you were describing that, you know, he's, you know, Enagbare is not someone who's going to play outside of the structure. And, you know, we've seen Preston do it all night long, you know, getting too far upfield.
Yeah.
You didn't see Enagbare do it maybe once or twice, but for the most part, he played great. And Lee asked in the chat, he said, why did 55 fall? I forgot. Was it attitude stuff? I couldn't tell you. I don't remember seeing attitude stuff. Do you remember anything at all?
I don't think so. And
that's what was so baffling. It was like, why is this guy dropping?
Yeah. Let me check the testing numbers. That might've been part of it, just because it's an edge rusher thing. And a lot of people love those, like, oh, the traits and all the athleticism needs to be there, you know, to have, you know, these true rushers, especially, like, three cone matters to a lot of people. But from what I remember, that might've been what it is. if I can find it.
You go ahead and check. In the chat here, Michael Toby says, Eagles own you, little bro. So I'm guessing we got an Eagles fan in the house. And if you are an Eagles fan, congratulations, man. Big win. Yeah. You guys have a solid team, man. You're built up front on both offense and defense. And, really good. And I'm telling you, man, you get in this cold weather football, you're built to win long term for sure. Yeah. But you got absolutely. That info there, Jake?
I do, yeah. So explosion grades look really good across the board. 36.5 in the vert is a 92nd percentile. That's really, really good. But it is the shuttle and three cones. We're in the 30s, 33rd percentile, 39th percentile for three cone and shuttle. So the shuttle times were not good. A lot of these times you want to see these edge rushers be able to corner quickly, be able to inside move quick. Like you want to see all that quickness changing direction. And to test like that, maybe dropped him a little bit further than he should have dropped. That would be my guess. Cause that's kind of how it happens for edge rushers. You look at a guy like Odafe Owe, who went in the first for the Ravens in 2021. Like there was no production and it was all traits and athleticism. Right. So that's kind of sometimes what happens with pass rushers. That's probably what it was.
Got it. Good stuff. That makes sense for sure. And you know, what we're seeing, at least what I feel like I've noticed here lately, the last few drafts is, these guys with the raw measurables, you know, the crazy upside, they're going in the early rounds. And I think that's why the Packers are kind of hitting on some of these late round guys, because it's more about what's on tape. You know, you've seen it with Zach Tom. He seems to be a pretty solid prospect. You're seeing it with Enigbare as well. And then, of course, why do you go up and trade up to a borderline first round pick to get Christian Watson? Because you're seeing the same thing they've seen in Quay Walker. You're seeing that raw talent, that physical ability, right? So – good stuff. I'll say this before we wrap up here. We're at the 45-minute mark, and we'll wrap up here real soon. I appreciate you joining me, Jake. It's been a lot of fun, dude. Aaron was at the podium, and Rob Domofsky tweeted out, Aaron Rodgers clarified he has a rib injury. He said it was, quote, hard to tell on the x-ray whether he had broken ribs. Wow. End of quote. But he doesn't have a punctured lung, but was, quote, having a hard time breathing and rotating my upper body. On the plus side, he said the thumb is better than last week. God love him, man. He is beat all to what. Man. He said Rodgers didn't rule out playing Sunday versus the Bears as long as I check out okay tomorrow. He said he wants to keep playing as the playoffs are mathematically possible. There's obviously a lot of other conversations that come into play once you're eliminated. So he understands that when they are mathematically eliminated, he's probably going to go on IR, step aside, and let Jordan take the reins, and I think that's the right move. Yeah. They are mathematically in it. I mean, if they had somehow pulled off this win tonight, I'm going, wow, if they win out, they're probably going to get in. So now it gets a lot more difficult. But, what do you think against the Bears next week, man? If Rodgers can go, do you send him out there if you're the GM, if you're the head coach? I mean, is that something that you say, send him out, or you go ahead and put Jordan Love in?
I just want to say that. I know. Here's the thing. As somebody who loves the draft and wants the Packers to get a really high pick once they're eliminated, if you can go out there and own the Bears on Sunday, you absolutely do it. I don't care. If 12 wants to play and you can own them, beat them twice this year, I don't care. Go beat them again. Like, that's it. That's it. Yeah. And if you want, and if they win, if they're somehow eliminated, perfect. That's a great way to end the season for 12 and let them, rest up for 23 is to just go beat the Bears. That sounds good.
Absolutely. And, I had a conversation with JJ Leahy off the air one day just through chatting, and he was throwing out the idea, not that he completely agrees with it, but just a little banter back and forth, having a conversation about, do you tank for a better pick and this and that. Me personally, I'm the old get off my lawn guy, Jake. I'm 40 years old, man. And I'm like, Herm Edwards, you play to win the game, dude, period, right? Yep. That's the way I see it. And like John Madden used to say, the second that every single game, no matter where you're ranked, where your draft status is, or where you're going to pick, there one year, I believe it was, New York Giants and Tom Coughlin, they had an opportunity where they could sit starters, right? And because it wasn't going to help their playoff position, but he played his starters and they went out and lost. But John Madden called him and left him a voicemail. And he was in tears talking about where John Madden was in tears on the voicemail saying, I can't tell you how much it means to me that you went out there to play to win the game, because the second that the game isn't about winning, then we don't have a sport anymore, right? And I kind of see it that way. I really do. And it's why other sports, three quarters of the way through the season, you see them begin to tank. And it's why the Miami Dolphins owner got hit with that huge fine, because that's what he was trying to do. It's just something that's really, really bad for the game, in my opinion. So I'm with you. Go out there and embarrass the Bears, for sure.
They want to spoil the Vikings season too. That's fine. They want to spoil the one seed.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, absolutely.
Go
yeah,
ahead. There you go. Go ahead. Go ahead. You know,
I'm all
the
about
Eagles
it,
a little bit of a boost, you know, give them the one seed.
But it's so good. Again, going back to the tweet that Aaron did mention, you know, that, hey, once we're mathematically eliminated, that, you know, the conversation changes a bit, and that would be awesome. Put them on IR. If Jordan Love comes out and plays like gangbusters and you can negotiate a deal, I mean, it's to the best of my understanding, as we get ready to wrap up here, the fifth-year option is going to cost over $20 million for Jordan Love. That's the way I understand it. So if that's the case, what if you offer him, you know, a two-year extension with the same amount of guaranteed, or maybe a little bit more guaranteed, $25 million? And you can always tack on a voidable year or set the foundation for a longer contract extension if he outplays that contract, and that gets you through that, you know, kind of bridging that gap between 12 and Jordan Love. I think that's probably the right way to go. But, man, I'll tell you this. When they drafted Jordan Love, there was a lot of Packer fans upset, and I was one of them that was excited. I got really excited because I'm like, this feels like Favre to Rodgers again. Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of that old, you know, saying, I believe it was, Bill Walsh said it, you know, the best time to draft or sign a quarterback is when you don't need one. Right. And they can sit and learn the system, and they can come along in that fashion. And when I seen that, I got excited. But also, I remember so many years, Jake, that if Aaron goes down with injury, it's the season's over. The backup comes in, and it's going to be garbage quarterback play. And when you've got a first-round talent, a legitimate first-round talent as your backup, if that moment does come and you don't wish that on 12, the season gets exciting in a different level. Like, okay, now we get to see what the young guy can do. And is this the Wally Pipp, right, coming in for Lou Gehrig, right? So I'm excited to see what he does. But we're at the 50-minute mark, so we're going to go ahead and get ready to get out of here. Appreciate everybody tuning in with us. And we just wanted to kind of cover the game again. Quick recap of the game. They ran the ball down our freaking throat. And Christian Watson scored another touchdown with another 100-yard game. But, Jake, as we sign off, man, before we do, any parting thoughts, anything you want to plug, or just anything on the game, anything in general, you got the floor, man.
You know, I'm very excited, even as the Packers potentially are eliminated very soon from playoff contention, because you're going to see – again, we get to focus on all of these young guys, and I know the defense hasn't been playing the best. I get it, but like to see more reps for Walker, Wyatt, and Igbare, maybe they can find a way to get Zach Tom in there a little bit more as well. Like there's a lot of young talent here, especially from this past draft class. That's going to be very exciting to watch. And man, buy your number 9 jerseys while they're hot right now. That's the last parting thought right there. Buy the number 9 jersey.
Exactly. It's funny. I got one sitting over here right now, and haven't framed it yet. Got the Quay Walker jersey as well. I went in on those guys, and we got a few to give away. And so I'm with you, man. I think he's shown everything you needed to see. You know, as of last week, I had him in that category of it's still too early to tell. Because there were some mistakes, right? And he made the huge flash plays, right? But you're, in my opinion, you're looking for consistency. You're looking for that Davante Adams consistency, someone you can count on week in and week out. Tonight, I'm pretty sure he went over into the hit column for me. It was a hit. So I'm excited.
Hard not to. Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, again, appreciate everybody hopping in the chat and hanging out with us. You guys are awesome. And Lee says here, good one, guys. Looking forward to better football. It's coming. Absolutely. And Jake, you hit the nail on the head, man. We get to watch these young guys develop. I'm excited to see. I will say this. As you were talking, it sparked a thought in my mind. Elton Jenkins seems to be healthy now, right? If you're going to bring Yosh back, it seems like this is going to be the offensive line. What I mean by Yosh is they have somewhat of a restriction on him where he'll be able to go out and test free agency, but we'll be able to match the offer. Yosh will probably be back at right tackle. So if Aaron does come back, Bakhtiari comes back, all these things fall into place, you're going to have Bakhtiari at left tackle, Elton Jenkins at left guard, Myers at center, Runyon at right guard, and Yosh at right tackle. Well, if for some reason somebody breaks the bank and offers him the money, who is your starting right tackle in your opinion? Because I kind of feel like I feel like Zach Tom can play left tackle at an NFL level. I think he's proven that. He struggled a little bit at left guard. Elton didn't look comfortable at right tackle. So if that is the case, do you, I think you got to bring Yosh back, right?
I think so. And I know there's a lot of like conversation because of the Packers, like that where they're at right now at, as far as record goes to like who's actually coming back next year, you know, with some of these big contracts. And like if for some reason, Bakhtiari either A decides that, you know, the game is just taking a toll on him physically, which I mean, coming back from the ACL clearly has been tough for him.
Yeah.
If he kind of decides maybe hang it up, or the Packers decide, you know, if they can unload him somewhere, they do. I mean, then I think bringing back Nyman becomes ever more crucial for them. And to have Tom and Nyman, I kind of feel okay with that in 2023. Now, if they wanted to add perhaps a tackle in the first round of the draft, that wouldn't be bad either. but yeah, the offensive line is going to be an interesting equation this offseason. It's going to be fascinating to see how they navigate it, because obviously Elton Jenkins is, you know, a free agent, and who knows, maybe some team's going to break the bank and give him, you know, 15, 16 and a half million a year. We'll see. But
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Lee in the chat says, is this a dumb question? What if Myers and Jenkins switch next year? Jenkins does well at center. Myers has lapses. What if they put him at left guard? It's funny that you say that, because in my opinion, Myers has been great at pass blocking, not so much in run blocking, in my opinion. So with that being said, Elton going back to his original drafted position, I mean, and I was talking to Coach Hahn about this off the air, Jake, that I rank positions by tiers. And on offense, that top tier is quarterback and left tackle. I've always kind of looked at it that way. On defense, it's edge defender, right? And then when you get into tier two, center falls into tier two for me. But I was asking Coach Hahn, I'm like, man, why do I feel like center is becoming as important as left tackle now? I just kind of feel like that. And he surprisingly disagreed. I thought he would go with the center and take the bait, but he didn't. He said, I'd still have to say left tackle protecting the blind side is the most important. But yeah, that's not a dumb question, Lee, because that's something I've thought of as well. What would you think of Elton at center, right?
Yeah, I think I remember doing like a video series on this, because obviously when Lindsey left, it was kind of like, where do they go from here, right? And I remember thinking, you know, I mean, if Elton slid back there, that wouldn't be, you know, for I think it was, what was that? Yeah, that was 2021. It'd be like, I didn't hate that idea. And I feel like you said, I remember the Josh Myers pick being like, okay, I get it kind of, because Ohio State, when they run zone, you see the flashes with Myers getting those second level landmarks, and you feel like, okay, that if they're betting on that, and they hope that that can be consistent in the NFL, and it kind of really hasn't. But the pass blocking's been exceptional, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I do agree. I don't think it's a crazy question. Now, what may even be crazier is, you know, if Elton Jenkins walks, do the Packers look at center in the draft and believe they can move Myers over to left guard?
Yeah.
Does that conversation potentially happen? That's
yeah. I mean, it's a great
that brings
point.
Up
yeah.
a whole lot of possibilities for the offensive line in 23.
And that's what's so exciting. Yeah. Even with the down year, guys, that's what's so exciting about it. So, all right, man, we're going to get out of here. Jake, again, man, I really appreciate your time, dude. It means a lot. Thanks, everybody in the chat, everybody on Twitter, YouTube, for tuning in. And for those of you listening to the postgame show on Monday morning, hopefully you guys have an awesome Monday. I know it's not a victory Monday, but I think we would all agree. We come away from this game going, you know what? They had some fight left in them. And LaFleur got these guys up to battle today, even through all the injuries. Guys, you got to keep in mind, still missing – our top defenders, our edge defender and Gary. You've got Campbell out, middle linebacker, on and on and on, right? And these guys continue to fight. I'm proud of this team, man. It's been a rough year, especially with the injuries 12's dealt with, but we're going to be back. We're going to be as strong as ever, and I think we might have seen tonight. We may have the very next starting quarterback right here in on the roster, so I'm excited about it. So, again, thanks for your time, Jake. We're going to get out of here. As always, let's go out and be the change we want to see in the world. Go, Pack, go.
Inches to go. The Vader. 17 to 14. Cowboys out in front. Starr begins the count. Takes the snap.
Third down and five, pressure. Pass is picked off, and who the touchdown. Pump fake. Wallace picked off. Nick Collins. Nick Collins on the return inside the 10. Leaps for the touchdown.